right now on Current State.
It's a really interesting space to be in, such a secluded, small island.
Hear from a Lansing woman with family in the path of Hurricane Irma.
Lansing is going to step up to the plate.
Michigan opens its heart to hurricane victims. Find out how you can help.
Spiders produce a particularly tough material that can absorb a lot of energy.
Material used to make cobwebs may soon protect our military in war zones.
And we see ourselves as a public university for Michigan and for the country and for the world. And that won't waver.
A major milestone for MSU. Learn how the most ambitious fundraising campaign in school history will help future students.
Now we share the same fear of being torn away from our families.
Plus, an undocumented immigrant living here in the capital region fears being deported back to Europe. From the WKAR studios at Michigan State University, this is Current State for September 9th and 10th. Hello and welcome. I'm WKAR Digital News Director Reginald Hardwick. We start with the active hurricane season and the impact across America and here in Michigan.
90% of the properties there were damaged. The wooden structures were totally demolished. In fact, Barbuda was literally relegated to rubble.
That is one of many descriptions of the devastation after Hurricane Irma, with wind gusts up to 250 miles per hour barreled through Barbuda. Meteorologists believe Irma will move along the Florida coast this weekend. Rena Risper publishes the New Citizens Press newspaper in Lansing. She has family on St. Martin, which Irma hit hard last week. She told us riding out a 400-mile-wide storm like Irma on the island the size of East Lansing would be difficult.
Imagine not having any place to go. That's one of the issues that I don't think people realize. We can't just get in a boat or a plane while the hurricane is in process and go to another island, because the other islands are being impacted just the same way. We can't, you know, get in our car and drive to another part of the country because the country is only 30 miles wide. So it's going to be a really interesting look at how one deals with being so alone on an island, trying to get everything in order, fix your roof, get supplies, get water. It's not like we can get a truck of water from Michigan and drive it down to, you know, Phillipsburg, because it's surrounded by water. So it's been a really interesting time viewing the devastation.
As we said earlier, Hurricane Irma is nearly 400 miles wide. For some perspective, if the storm was located over Michigan, it would cover the entire Lower Peninsula, Lakes Erie, Huron, and Michigan, and half of Lake Superior as well. We have a map that illustrates this on the WKAR Facebook page. Once Irma is finished with Florida, people from our state will be there with a helping hand. 200 Consumers Energy employees and 40 large bucket trucks and service vehicles left for the Sunshine State last week. Greg Salisbury, Vice President of Operations Performance at Consumers Energy, told WLNS-TV why the workers are headed out of state.
The resources in the southeast are pretty well tapped for this event, and they'll respond and be dispatched out on wire downs, on broken poles, and potentially substation activities that require the skills and abilities that these guys are certified and ready to work in.
Meanwhile, mid-Michigan is also helping our friends in South Texas, where Hurricane Harvey dumped nearly 50 inches of rain in less than a week. As WKAR's Kevin Lavery reports, you can help too.
The campaign, dubbed Lansing Strong for TX, hopes to raise $10,000 in cash to the American Red Cross. Organizers are also accepting other donations, including toiletries, baby supplies, and cleaning products. Renee Freeman is Lansing Mayor Virge Brunero's office manager and a project leader.
Lansing is going to step up to the plate. We are going to show our unity and coordinate this effort and send everything back to Texas in a grand style.
Dean Trailways is providing a bus that will deliver supplies and volunteers to Texas. That bus is expected to depart Lansing on or around September 12th and return the following week. Kevin Lavery, WKAR News.
So how do hurricanes get their start? And is climate change a factor in the strong storms we've seen this year? Morning Edition host Brooke Allen is here with an MSU professor who has some answers.
This weekend, Hurricane Irma is expected to do a lot of damage along the Florida coast. Katia is turning in the Gulf of Mexico, and Jose is crossing the Atlantic now. These three storms are less than a week after Hurricane Harvey dumped up to 50 inches of rain in the Houston area. Joining us now is Dr. Nathan Moore, associate professor at MSU's Department of Geography, Environment, and Spatial Sciences. Welcome to Current State, and you're one of our favorite guests.
Thanks for having me.
Briefly tell us, how are hurricanes formed, particularly in the Atlantic Ocean?
We have easterly flowing winds, and they create waves. So you get these, what we call African easterly waves. They're just oscillations of pressure that are along the tropics. And as the waves start to develop, there starts to be a twist. And it allows for hot air to basically vent itself upwards and move heat out of the system. But in doing so, you know, vortices are stable. So it tends to move that heat efficiently outward. Rotation is the best option. And these African easterly waves start to spin. And then if they get the right set of conditions and no wind shear aloft, then a hurricane will develop and intensify.
Okay, so Irma is powerful, to say the least.
Yes, very powerful.
Okay, so why is that? Why is Irma so powerful?
There's a lot of heat. That's really the main driving force behind a hurricane strength. If it has a lot of water vapor that's warm, that's the fuel for the hurricane. It's had maximum sustained winds of over 180 miles an hour with gusts up to 240 miles an hour. That's faster than NASCAR. That's really, really strong winds.
You said climate change cannot be chalked up to one event like Hurricane Harvey. So now we have four major hurricanes in the Atlantic, and while that's new, is the strength of these latest hurricanes indicative of climate change?
I would say it's consistent with climate change, but I'm still going to say, statistically, you need a whole distribution, you know, a sample of about 25 to 30 hurricanes to say whether or not the actual statistics have changed. Three or four still isn't enough. There's too much uncertainty with just looking at three or four, but it's certainly consistent.
When does the official hurricane season start?
I believe it starts June 1st.
And how long does the season last?
Usually till December 1st.
Dr. Nathan Moore, he is the associate professor at MSU's Department of Geography, Environment, and Spatial Sciences. For Current State, I'm Brooke Allen, WKAR News. The moon went high and stars quit shining, rain was driving, thunder lightning, you wrecked my whole world when you came, and hit me like a hurricane, hit me like a hurricane.
Spiders. Some of us don't mind them. Others are creeped out by our eight-legged friends. But WKAR's Kevin Lavery says two Michigan companies are using a spider byproduct to one day save lives on the battlefield.
If you're a fan of Marvel superheroes, you know the story. Boy meets spider. Spider bites boy. Boy develops extraordinary powers. Boy designs uber cool spider suit. Now imagine a tough, protective suit worn by real-life heroes that actually comes from a spider. Sounds too sci-fi? Well, it's closer than you think. Back in 2007, I took a trip up to Camp Grayling, the sprawling military post where the Michigan Army National Guard plays its war games. That was the day I met then-Master Sergeant Ron Raflick, who picked me up in a Humvee, looking every bit the professional soldier.
I'm wearing full individual body armor and a Kevlar helmet, also referred to as our battle rattle.
That incarnation of battle rattle protected countless American soldiers on the battlefield for years. Now the military is looking to take its combat uniform to the next level. The Army has recently inked a more than $1 million deal with Ann Arbor-based Craig Biocraft Laboratories to develop an elastic yet durable fiber that can be woven into protective clothing. The science is fairly new, but the source is very old.
Silkworms produce silk. Spiders produce silk. They have different recipes, different designs.
That's John Rice, the COO of Craig Labs.
He's talking about the protein silkworms use to spin their cocoons and spiders their webs. Spiders produce a particularly tough material that can absorb a lot of energy and even deform without fracturing. Problem is, it's hard to round up a lot of spiders in one place to harvest their silk. They tend to eat each other. So, says Rice, Craig Labs has stepped in to teach an old worm a new trick.
We've taken that recipe from the spider, recreated that, and created an enhanced silkworm, a genetically engineered silkworm, that produces that spider's design.
You've taught a silkworm how to act like a spider.
That's exactly right.
Spider silk is more elastic than Kevlar, the fibrous material found in the Army's combat helmet since the 1980s. Rice says his company's product could also be used in body armor and even protective undergarments. Craig Labs is not the only Michigan entity working on synthetic silk. Chad Pastor is showing me around the lab at the Bioeconomy Institute just off the MSU campus. He's the business development manager here. We're watching a frothy liquid churning in a cylinder about the size of an espresso maker. Inside this foggy broth is replicated spider DNA.
Where are the stars of our show? Where are the spiders?
They don't exist. The real stars of the show are the microbes that are making the products themselves.
Pastor says yeast is mixed with genetic material in a fermentation chamber to make microbes that will eventually grow and grow and grow.
So the same way you'd brew beer is the same way that they make these proteins, and then you separate the proteins, purify them, then they extrude them, and they spin them into threads to make fabrics.
From here, the product is scaled up in a sequence of fermenters until it comes out as a dense liquid. Then it's shipped to California-based Bolt Threads, where it's woven into fiber. Bolt Threads is collaborating in the clothing business with a British designer who knows something about spiders and beetles. You can knit a sweater by the fireside. Yep, Sir Paul's daughter, Stella McCartney. She's designed a brilliant gold dress made from synthetic spider silk yarn. Silk protein fabrication is still a developing science, but Craig Labs COO John Rice says his company is leaning on experience the silk textile industry has built over centuries.
We have 4,000 years of history, of process, of equipment, of manufacturing, of design, of labor, that all know how to do this very, very well.
And here's the bottom line. With the advent of gene sequencing, the cost of replicating spider DNA has dropped dramatically in the last 10 years. And Rice says that's clearing the way for more products to come to market. Time for my outro now. This yarn has been spun. For WKAR News, I'm Kevin Labor. The spiders all in tune, the evening of the moon. Dreams are made winding through my head.
Nearly a 250,000 alumni and friends brought Michigan State University to a significant milestone, surging past the fundraising goal of $1.5 billion more than a year before the Empower Extraordinary campaign is set to conclude. WKAR contributor Russ White sat down with MSU's president to see where the money is going.
Well, one of the hallmarks of a successful campaign is meeting your goal early. This campaign, meeting it essentially almost a year and a half earlier, is really great.
That's Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon.
Yeah, I think it represents a recognition that Michigan State continues to appreciate and value. The campaign goal of $1.5 billion will exceed. We're not going to set another goal because we just want people to continue to work with us in a habit of giving. And we do have some work to do with the campaign to close and meet our targets for endowed positions and scholarships. Though we've created, I think, about 1,200 new scholarships. That's terrific. We've created about 60-plus new endowed chairs and positions, professorships, which is terrific. We've got a lot more work to do to be competitive and assure that Michigan State University attracts and retains the kind of people we want as faculty and students, and that the world would want us to have in ways that are, I think, are very, very, very positive.
The campaign, which publicly launched in the fall of 2014, is the most ambitious in MSU's history. It will continue through December 31st, 2018, with a focus on funding several key initiatives.
So we have facilities that we need to complete, the research building in Grand Rapids and the Broad Pavilion. So we have to complete those fundraising efforts. And those are really important for the institution. There's a new piece of an addition for Music on the Horizon that we want to launch in the later stages of this campaign that will continue through, you know, into the first part of the next campaign. And that's an important launch for us to do. So those are pieces that are yet to be done.
While the Empower Extraordinary campaign goal has been met over a year early, President Simon emphasizes that the fundraising momentum must continue in order to maintain MSU's excellence.
More importantly, you've just got to continue to raise money. I mean, we have a big public heart. So it is, and we see ourselves as a public university for Michigan and for the country and for the world. And that won't waver, but we do need to have private resources to fuel those margins of excellence that I think you'll see emerging, because the investments in this campaign, those gifts won't see any impact for a while. That's why we have to sort of continue to build for the future.
There's more at empower.msu.edu. I'm Russ White reporting for WKAR News.
WKAR is your NPR station in the Capital Region, and it's time to see what your Michigan lawmakers are up to. Joining us now is Capital correspondent Shayna Roth.
Hello.
First, let's talk about possible campaign finance reform here in Michigan.
Yeah, so there is this bill, or a set of bills, rather, going around that are by detractors being called Citizens United on steroids. What proponents of the bills are saying is, you know, there's this federal campaign finance case. These bills are really just going to codify that into state law. But, you know, opponents of these bills are saying, look, this goes way beyond any sort of Citizens United federal case, and it's going to allow for a lot more money to be going to politicians and to lawmakers in their campaign coffers. It was going to be up for a vote in the Senate. It was on the agenda. It looked like it was ready to go, but then Senate Majority Leader Arlen Meekhoff said, you know, we're going to hold off on this for now. He wanted to talk it over with the Speaker of the House because he wants to make sure that as soon as they're taken care of in the Senate, that the House is going to take them up right away. And I guess he just doesn't have those assurances yet. So we'll just have to stay tuned and find out what happens on that one.
It's rare that we see a veto override in Michigan. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so there's an interesting bill that got vetoed by the governor earlier this year. What it does is it involves the individual sales tax on trade-ins for used cars to new ones. And there had been this plan to roll that back over, you know, a couple decades. And this bill would have accelerated that rollback. And it's one of the, you know, the governor doesn't veto bills a whole lot, particularly given that, you know, his party is in the majority in both chambers. But he vetoed this one. And now it looks like we're going to see, it's possible that we could see a veto override, which hasn't happened in years.
So a lot of the lawmakers were on break during the events in Charlottesville with the violence and racial tensions and such. Mm-hmm. And I understand lawmakers are now thinking about that situation and how it pertains here in Michigan.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, this was their first week back after their summer recess. And they took the opportunity to respond to some of the things that happened over the summer, including Charlottesville. And a Democratic senator introduced a resolution. This is not a bill. This is not a law. It's just really the Senate coming together and saying that we do not appreciate white supremacy or white nationalists, and we want to brand them as domestic terrorists. And the resolution got bipartisan support, and so what that means is it passed, and it will be a statement that is then sent to President Donald Trump, the governor, and then a few other members of the Michigan delegation.
Next, we're talking about medical marijuana here in Michigan. Lansing last week passed a new ordinance that will cap the number of dispensaries in the city at 25. But separately from that, the Medical Marijuana Licensing Board is getting ready to meet again.
So what's going on is at the last open meeting of the Medical Marijuana Licensing Board, one of the members of the board said, we need to close all the dispensaries in the state, that they're not operating legally. And so what he wants to do is to tell all the dispensaries, look, you can close your doors now, and then when the application process comes back up, you can get you can apply and you can get a license, and then you can run legally. But if you don't do that, if you just keep operating, one, you'll be in violation of the law and you could get shut down that way. And two, when you tried to apply for a license, we won't give you one. So this caused a huge uproar at the meeting. People were concerned about, you know, how am I going to get my medical marijuana? Things like, is this fair? Things like that. So this week, they are having a board meeting in Bath Township. From what I can see from their the news website that posts, you know, when these things are happening, it isn't clear at this point if it's going to be a public meeting. There isn't an agenda posted. So it's possible it could just be the board members sitting down and being like, we have a lot to figure out, because the application process is supposed to open around December, January. So they have a few months left, and they're going to be getting hundreds, if not thousands, of applications from people and, you know, business owners who want to get these permits. And they still don't quite have a plan yet of how they're going to prioritize people, how they're going to deal with the influx. And they have a lot to sort out. And now on top of that, they also have to figure out, what are we going to do about dispensaries?
So we have reported here at WKAR News, organization around medical marijuana is still so much in flux. And
yes,
it's been 9 years since the voters passed the law to have it here in Michigan.
Yes, it is. I mean, it is something that is just been constantly evolving. And when I was a prosecuting attorney, having to deal and interpret the medical marijuana law in that angle was, you know, depending on what judge you were in front of, you could get a different ruling on the same issue. So it's really something that has not been on solid ground. And I think the Medical Marijuana Licensing Board is an effort by the state to do that. But right now, it's really looking like, you know, they're not there yet, and they have a lot of issues that they need to figure out.
We know you will be watching it. Thank
yes.
you, Shayna Roth. Listen to her weekday mornings on Morning Edition and afternoons on All Things Considered. Always appreciate you updating us.
Thank you for having me.
Look what you made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you just made me do.
A reminder, if you click on the current state story on WKAR.org, you will see music videos that go with many of the songs we've used in our breaks today. And coming up, if you think all of the beneficiaries of DACA are from Latin America, think again. Another half hour of WKAR's current state starts right after this.
But I got smarter, I got harder in the nick of time. Honey, I rose up from the dead, I do it all the time. I got a list of names and yours is in red underlined. I check it once, then I check it twice. Oh, look what you made me do. Look what you made me do. Look what you just made me do. Look what you just...